Political analysts have been dividing the country into red states and blue states for several years now, but it's only in the last year or two that the distinction has really caught on with the media and the public. As our linguist Jeff Nunberg points out, the odd thing is that the new usage seems to reverse the traditional political meanings of red and blue.
Color names are the most elemental labels you can give to opposing sides. They suggest irreconcilable divisions that go deeper than merely political differences. You think of the whites and reds of the War of the Roses or of the Russian Revolution, or of the blues and greens of Constantinople, who began as the supporters of different chariot racing teams at the circus and grew into warring factions that pervaded the life of the Byzantine Empire. By those historical standards, America's decision to divide itself into blue and red cultures is a pretty genteel affair, more on the order of a summer camp color war. But it's odd the way this has come on us so suddenly. The terms themselves go back a few election cycles. According to Grant Barrett's recent political dictionary, Hatchet Jobs and Hardball, they first appeared during the 1992 presidential election. That was when the networks decided to coordinate their electoral graphics using blue for the Democrats and red for the Republicans. But words are like fashions. They can lie around on the shelf for a long time before somebody suddenly decides to make a statement with them. Until recently, blue state and red state were rarely used. As late as 2000, the terms only appeared about a dozen times in major newspapers, and always in stories about the presidential election itself. Over the last year, by contrast, they've appeared over 2,500 times, and they show no signs of tailing off even as people put the 2004 election behind them. The terms aren't exclusively political anymore, either. There's no aspect of American life that hasn't been given a place on the national color wheel. A recent article in Brand Week reports that Scotts is introducing a new fertilizer that's aimed at the blue state market. The Cincinnati Reds pitcher Joe Valentine, who was raised by lesbian parents, describes himself as a blue state guy playing in a red state sport. And the New York Times quotes the program director of a Los Angeles radio station disparaging some competitors who play what he calls red state rock. That phrase pretty much sums up the socio-political theory behind the blue-red distinction. If you liked Lynyrd Skynyrd, you'll love George Bush. That may explain why the phrases red state and blue state reverse the traditional political associations of those colors. Until recently, red connoted the revolutionary left, the Red Army, the Little Red Book, a bunch of reds. That connection was first made in the 1830s, from the color of either a flag or a party badge. There are different stories about this. But it caught on because red evokes passion, violence, and the forbidden. If those flags or badges had been colored yellowish-brown, nobody would have been tempted to describe John Reed, Emma Goldman, and the rest as a bunch of ochres. And once red was in place for the left, it led to the spin-offs pink and pinko as derisive labels for bourgeois radical wannabes, a color that suggests both pallid conviction and effeminacy at the same time. Blue, on the other hand, evokes fixity, coolness, and reserve, which is why it's historically associated with conservatism and propriety. You think of blue bloods and blue noses for prudes, not to mention blue chips, blue laws, and the blue book that lists the names of socially prominent families. Blue is the traditional color of the Conservative Party in the UK, and in Canada, the blue Tories are the conservative wing of the party. It's no wonder foreigners sometimes feel that we Americans have gotten our chromatic wires crossed. But even if the red-blue reversal began as the arbitrary decision of a network graphic artist, it makes a certain sense. After the fall of communism and the eclipse of the far left, a color that connotes wild-eyed radicals doesn't have much relevance to the media stereotype of urban liberals from Boston or San Francisco. Those effete, intellectual, bloodless, well, blue stockings is what we used to call it. And red has other associations that make it appropriate to stand in for heartland American culture. You could start with the idea of the heartland itself and add red-blooded and red meat with redneck hovering unspoken in the background. But then the whole idea of a blue-red cultural dichotomy doesn't bear close examination in the first place. It evaporates as soon as you look at a county-by-county election map or at a list of Starbucks locations. True, that won't necessarily deter people from making the blue-red distinction a permanent part of the American political lexicon, as a cultural counterpart of left and right. The media thrive on facile oversimplifications, particularly when they come with good visuals. But the faster the media pick up on a fashion, the more quickly they tend to drop it when it gets tired. If I had to bet, I'd guess that the appeal of dividing America into color-coded cultures will fade as soon as another presidential election rearranges the electoral quilt into something less tidy. Or as soon as The Simple Life goes into reruns. Whichever comes first.
Linguist Jeff Nunberg is the author of Going Nuclear: Language, Politics, and Culture in Confrontational Times. The paperback edition will be published in June.